Okay, let's get started.
Whoa, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 45 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line from Melbourne once again for the last time for God knows how long, Shelton Muller, how are you?
I'm not going away anywhere permanent, mate. I'm just heading off to Argentina.
You're just packing your bags.
Just packing the bags, packing the camera bag, of course. That's the most important thing, making sure, yeah. I'm covered from 11 mil to 300 mil. So,
awesome.
Making sure I've got it all there. I am really looking forward to it. So,
and how many bodies are you taking with you?
There's 8 of us all together. So
no, I meant of the camera variety.
Okay, fine. Okay, not 8. No, I'm taking 2 digital SLRs, and I'm taking a Sony that I took, and I think I've talked about it on this show that I took to China last year. I'm taking that little Sony again.
Right.
I'm also taking Rico have asked me to take their GR Digital. Now that is a fabulous little camera.
Yeah,
it's an 8 megapixel little compact with a fixed 28 mil equivalent lens, and it's just a great camera. I've been doing a series of editorials in Total Image on that camera.
Yep.
And you can download them off the total-image.com.au website. And it's just I'm really looking forward to taking that camera and shooting with it. So I'll have 4 cameras with me. That's 2 digital SLRs, 1 all-in-one type prosumer camera, my Sony, and the little compact digital. I'm actually not taking any film cameras, to my knowledge, this time. It'll be the first time I've ever traveled without a film camera.
Wow.
So, I'm going to see how that goes. But last time I traveled with a film camera, I only did a couple of rolls of film, and I hardly ever, I haven't found much use for the transparencies, which is an unusual thing for me to say, but everything I shot...
A sign of the times, yeah.
A friend of mine who shot film, he's coming with us to Argentina. He came with me to China. He's been with me a few times, actually, Tony Fowler, and he's a madman, absolute madman. He's come with me as many times as he has is obviously a madman. but he shot film, and every single roll of film was destroyed in X-ray.
Yep. You're kidding.
His entire Silk Road photo tour destroyed in X-ray.
Oh, no. Mm.
Yep. So, but he still refuses to come over to from the dark side, or to the, well, he'd call it to the dark side, he'd call it.
Yeah, right.
He'll protect himself a little more this time, I think,
But what do you do? What do you do to protect film?
Well, look, he has in times past always insisted on a hand inspection.
Yeah.
And he's a mean looking bloke, so he usually gets it. He didn't insist on it this time and just put it through the machines because he was told they were film safe. But he uses a Fuji 800 press.
Right.
So perhaps he should have been a little more careful.
Yeah.
Because it's a high ISO film. So
yeah,
it was probably a little more susceptible to X-ray than he thought. And of course, those lead line bags are questionable because they need to see what's inside them. So all they do is simply turn up the
X-ray. Crank up the scanner.
Crank up the scanner. And so really, if you've got a high ISO film, you've got to ask for a hand inspection.
Yeah.
Now, here's an old trick that somebody taught me. What you do is you take all of your film out of the boxes and you leave them in the plastic cartridges. And you, somewhere in there, you put a roll of infrared film. And you tell them that there is a roll of infrared film and that it will be destroyed, but you don't know which roll it is. So can you please just get them to hand inspect your little package of, just put them all in a plastic bag or a satchel and say, look, one of these is infrared. I don't know which one it is. Or one of them is a 1600 ISO film.
Yeah.
So please, can I just give them to you personally and you check it all out? Because if it goes through the machine, it'll be destroyed and sometimes you get your way. They hate hand inspecting because they just like to stand there next to their machines and put things through because it's very easy for them, but there are ways and means. In fact, if our listeners have found any really clever ways of getting past X-ray machines at airports, let us know.
Yeah.
Sometimes these guys are just so lazy they can't be bothered, and you risk all your images.
Yeah.
So if you're still a film shooter and you're working your way through X-ray machines, let us know if you've got any tips or tricks to get through them without having to put them through the machines. I've never had an issue. I've put 100 ISO tranny through X-ray machines that have been guaranteed guaranteed film safe, and I've never had an issue. So,
right.
You know, I think a lot depends on the nature of the machine and what kind of film you have and how many times that same roll of film goes through an X-ray machine. So,
yeah. There
you go. Wasn't intending to talk about X-ray, but there you go. That's the way our conversation
But I think it's an important issue, you know. I mean, you know, more and more people are using, you know, digital photography, and, you know, the world just keeps getting smaller. We're traveling more, and it's more and more of an issue, you know.
And since 9/11, we've all become overtly paranoid. Recent laws in Australia are driving photographers crazy. In fact, they're not laws at all. And this is the thing. I read a report from the Herald Sun.
Wasn't that just crazy?
It was ridiculous. Down at Southgate here, which is sort of a riverside cafe shopping area, very, very popular with tourists, they have signs saying no photography, no photography, no photography. Now, the law here is that if you're on public property, you can photograph anything you like, but it won't stop security guards coming out and giving you a hard time.
Yep.
Now, they have no right to touch you. They have no right to ask you to delete the image. They have no right to handle your gear. They have no right to escort you off public property. They have no right to tell you to stop taking pictures, but they will do it anyway. And they will even call police over to intimidate. But legally, in this country, if you're on public property, you can photograph anywhere, anything, and no one can tell you otherwise. The moment you enter upon private property, if you go inside the complex, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
And I imagine in the United States and many other countries, that law is the same. Recently, Geelong Camera Club here in Victoria was photographing some industrial sites from a roadside, and the local police came and asked them to stop. Now, they had no legal right to ask them to stop, and there was nothing binding upon the photographers to make them stop. But nonetheless, they were so intimidated that they did stop. And, of course, have since taken up all sorts of, you know, legal means of protest, one of which I think recently included about 100 people going down to photograph the one place together to see whether, you know. I'm led to believe that a local camera club actually got 100 amateur photographers to go down to Southgate here in Melbourne and take pictures.
Just as a protest.
Just to sort of see what they can do about it. So no matter where you are, if you're told to stop taking pictures and you're on public property, I'm not, you know, this is in Australia, you have a right to photograph, and you do have, you know, there's nothing binding upon you to stop. The laws may change, but as far as I'm led to believe, you know, you do have that legal right.
All right. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about something this week, and I guess I really want to ask the question of the listeners, and that is EXIF data. Now, Shelton, you might have some information on this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like to tag my photos with keywords, specifically of, you know, the people that are in them, where they were taken, and anything else that might be relevant, so that if I want to, at some point in the future, I want to go and say, you know, I might remember taking Max to a particular park and I want to find, you know, that photo, then I can use, you know, the name of the park and Max as keywords to search back through the hundreds and hundreds of digital photos that I've got to find those images. Now, I have been using Thumbs Plus as an image database program, and it will allow me to assign keywords in bulk, so I can, you know, select like 50 photos from one session and say, you know, these were all taken at such and such a park, and it will add that keyword to every one of those images in one hit, which is fantastic. The downside is that those keywords are stored in a database which is separate to the image.
Right.
What I want to know is there any way of adding keywords to the actual image file, like you add an ID3 tag to an MP3 file, so that no matter where that image goes, no matter what application opens it, the keyword data goes with it.
Right.
Now, I've had a look at the EXIF spec on the EXIF.org website, and it doesn't appear that there is actually a keyword tag within the EXIF specification. So, my question to Shelton and to anyone listening is there a way of adding keyword data to the image file so it's actually part of the image file?
Okay. Okay.
Do you know anything on that, Shelton?
Or? No, I must admit to being a digital photographer who rarely uses EXIF data.
Right.
And that, you know, it's just not the way I work. I'm too scatterbrained to be that organized. But, you know, I just put my pictures in directories, man. There you go. That's the Silk Road. Well, that's Kashgar. That's Turpan. That's, you know, that's Beijing. Okay. And, of course, that's my way. It's just so simple. And, of course, with, you know, my intelligence quotient of about 27... that's about all I can really handle. But no, I, in all honesty, I don't really use EXIF data much, and you've prompted me to consider using it more. It's an interesting question. Let's leave it for our listeners. I reckon we should get as Il Guapo said in The Three Amigos, we should get a plethora of answers from our listeners, and let's see what you guys have come up with.
Well, I hope so. I mean, what I find frustrating is that I can use Thumbs Plus, and I have no problem with staying with Thumbs Plus, except for the fact that it will not open, or at least the version I'm running, won't open a RAW file.
Right.
So if I've shot stuff in RAW, I'm then forced to go to Adobe Bridge, which, I have no problem with Adobe Bridge other than it's a bit of a resource hog. But again, it stores the keywords in a separate database. They're not embedded into the image itself.
Mm.
So, you know, and I can't, if I did decide to migrate to just using Adobe Bridge, I can't import the keywords that I've already assigned in the Thumbs database. So it's just a bit painful. I was hoping that, you know, somewhere, somehow, there would be a way of attaching them to the images themselves. So
let's all do some research, okay? We formed a worldwide fraternity here. Now we should work together to solve your problem. So let us all gather unto one another, brothers, and let us solve this problem for dear brother Bruce, because it's a very good question, and our worldwide fraternity should be up.
There's got to be an answer out there somewhere.
There must be an answer. One of you digital guys out there has got to help Bruce with this. I'm going to look into it myself. Let's see what we can come up with.
For sure.
Mm.
Okay, was there anything you were going to cover this week?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A couple of things. I have spoken many times on a pet subject that I think photographers fail to use the power of, and that is depth of field.
Right.
So what I'm going to do for everybody is direct you to my magazine's website, where I have built a video tutorial on the power of depth of field, and I want you all to watch it, okay? It's www.total-image.com.au. That's our magazine's website. And there's a little video there, a video tutorial of the power of depth of field. So I've put that together. I'd love your opinions on it, and to see whether it's helped you to see the power of using, you know, your apertures in photography for, you know, depth of field. So go there. And also on my personal website, which is photographybyshelton.com, you can also download a couple of PDFs. One is 10 Tips to Dynamic Images, and the other one is 10 Tips to Better People Pictures.
Hey, we got shortchanged by 6 tips.
Well,
what's the story?
what do you mean, Bruce?
Well, you did Shelton's 4 steps to dynamic images. Where's the other 6?
Oh, well, there's
we got ripped
4 tips.
Off, listeners.
That's right, which is why you got to download this PDF. Those 10 tips are a little more specific.
Okay.
My formula is that's a mathematical formula, and of course, therefore, deals in principles. But this 10 tips is far more specific.
Okay.
Personally, if you can apply those 4 principles, you're going to come up with these 10 tips anyway, right? So, you know, no, I haven't ripped anybody off. No. We're all up front here, Bruce. No ripping off. But you're more than welcome. I'd really appreciate you going there and having a look at those 10 tips and seeing what you think. And also checking out the depth of field video that I've put together at total-image.com.au and letting me know what you think. I'm planning to do some more. And making them available even on DVD. So that's a plan for me at the moment. If the idea interests you, let me know. But for the moment, what I wanted to talk about is using light. We often talk about light, and why not? Because photography comes from 2 Greek words, as we know, that mean to write with light. And yet we very rarely see light as a tool. We often think of our tools as cameras and lenses and flash guns and hardware. But light is our tool. So four brief ways that I'm going to leave with you to consider and to work with until I get back in late August from Argentina, and I'll have a lot to talk about then. Four things I want to talk about: using light to reveal shape, to reveal form, to reveal texture, and to reveal emotion. Let's just quickly talk about how we do that, and you can employ these in your photography while I'm away, okay? There's four weeks worth of work here for you, and I'm not going to be gone that long. So, if we use light to reveal shape, shape is the simplest means by which we can identify an object. You know, think of a hand. Your hand is a shape. A tree, the profile, a human profile, or a face profile. We can use light to effectively identify an object and its shape and make it real to us. How you do that is to maybe reveal shape by means of silhouette using backlighting. Rim lighting is a very effective way of revealing shape. It's often used in portraiture and romantic portraiture, wedding portraiture, but it's very good also to reveal shape because it illuminates the outer edge of a subject. So use light.
How does rim lighting differ from backlighting?
Well, they're much the same thing, except not all backlighting will rim light. A rim light, depends on how, you know, you can backlight, but it might not leave the effect of a rim light, you know, in the hair and around the outer shape of your subject. I'll post some images on the website for everybody to see that will give you an idea of what, say, rim lighting is as against, you know, just a maybe straight backlighting or whatever. So check the website. I'll find some images to give you some visual ideas of what we're talking about. But backlight may just simply silhouette the subject, whereas rim lighting, you get a little bit of detail in the...
Bit of a halo.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Form. Now, because we're working in a two-dimensional medium, photography is, you know, two dimensions, what we really want to try to do is convey three. Now, we can use light to reveal form within a two-dimensional frame by using angled lighting to create a range of shadows, graduated tones, and thus convey three dimensions to the mind when all we're really seeing, of course, is two. Diffused light will reduce the contrast and gives you greater detail in the shadows, provided, of course, you have shadows. Make sure that the light is not so diffused that there's very little shadow. That's having no shadow at all can be advantageous too, depending on what your effect is. But you do usually want shadow, and you usually want heat detail in highlight and shadow. Why we strive for this is so that we can reveal three dimensions in two. If we have hard light and very little reflection, we allow less detail in the shadows. So we can use light depending on how we use, what effect we want to convey to reveal form. And the decision on what kind of light you want to use to reveal form will depend from subject to subject. For greater revealing of form, make sure that your subject is turned to the light to reveal as many surfaces and angles as possible, but make sure that the light is not so hard so as to, that would depend on the subject, of course, but you want to retain as much detail as possible. Texture. Because humans are a tactile species, you know, the moment you see a texture, you want to go up and touch it. And it's just a very natural thing for us. If we can evoke that in a photograph, it becomes very, very powerful. You know, think of a photograph of maybe the rough, wrinkly skin of some aged person in a country. You think of an elephant's hide. Think of wood and grain. Think of all the things that we touch that connect us with our subject in a tactile way. Well, you can use light to reveal texture in a photograph by turning the light, making sure that it reveals texture. Frontal lighting, for instance, only conceals texture. That's why one of the reasons I hate full frontal flash, because it very rarely gives us any idea of the texture of a person's skin. So the more we use lighting, usually from the side, and it doesn't have to be soft lighting, it can be hard lighting, but provided that it gives us, that side lighting gives us an idea of texture by creating, of course, you know, shadows and highlights, we can connect to the subject in a more tactile way. The more subtle the texture, sometimes the harder the lighting that's required. This is generally the rule, although portraiture, where you've got skin and you've got, you know, facial hair and a little bit of facial fuzz, you know, that little bit of, you know, hair that we all have that can be quite soft and cute, especially in children. If you use hard lighting there, it can be, it can actually be, you know, quite... it's not complementary to the portrait, but skin texture, you know, really soft lighting you want to use. But in the case of maybe rugged, let's say you've got a cowboy, a stockman, you know, where you've got a hard, rugged face, hard lighting might actually be quite congruent with that subject. Really, again, you've got to play with that and know the nature of light. But you can use light very effectively to reveal texture and make us connect with a subject at a very tactile level. Emotion. The color of light often reveals or evokes emotion. We think of daylight as having different colors, and we've discussed this on the pod many times. You know that as your sun moves through the day, it changes the nature of its color. In the morning and in the afternoon, it's warm and romantic and, you know, soft and beautiful. But as it goes through the day, it can become bluer and harder. So the color of light can change how we feel about a particular place. If it's a cloudy or overcast day, how you feel about a landscape or someone within that landscape will change depending on, you know, the kind of light you have. If you can imagine in your mind now a person standing in a landscape and the sky is overcast, imagine that same image if the person is standing in the landscape in early morning or late afternoon sweet light, that gorgeous warm light. You feel completely different about that subject, and you can't really convey romantic emotion necessarily in a cold blue overcast kind of light. You can maybe, but you'd have to be very clever. We try to create images and the light is not congruent with the mood we endeavor to create. So when you go out and to take pictures and there's a certain kind of prevailing light, you may need to change how you feel about the subject, or what kind of feel you want to create rather, depending on the prevailing light. You may not be able to achieve in that light the feel you want to create. And you've got to change your entire way of photographing, because light evokes emotion. And if the light is incongruent with the kind of emotion we want to evoke in an image, we've got to change the way we shoot that image, because one will work against the other. You can't put a bridal couple in hard beating sunlight and expect it to look romantic when there's hard shadows and washed out bridal dresses, you know, and they're squinting and it's hot, you know. And so use the light that you have to convey the emotion that is congruent with it, or come back when that light is congruent with the idea that you have in mind. But it's very hard when we have a form of light that is incongruent with the kind of emotion we want to convey. So there's four ways that we can use light to reveal shape, to reveal form, from three-dimensional form, to reveal texture, thus connecting us in a tactile level to our subject, which is very important, and of course conveying something also very important to the viewer, emotion. Think about those four means. We can talk about them in greater detail if indeed our listeners want to, but there's just a quick overview to get us by until I get back from Argentina.
Beautiful. How long are you gone for?
I will be back on the 27th of August. I arrive, fly into Sydney.
Sunday,
I think it is.
Okay, so do you want to do one that week, like the following Thursday?
Absolutely, because I think I'll have a lot to talk about.
Beautiful. Sensational. Okay, so it'll be early September.
Yeah, and hopefully I'll be missed.
I'm sure you will.
I'm hoping I'll be missed.
I'm sure there'll be 100 emails for you to look at when you get back.
I hope so.
Cool. All right. Well, one last thing I wanted to mention. I got an email from a listener this morning pointing me to a review on dpreview.com for a Sony GPS attachment for Sony digital cameras. And this sort of follows on from what we were talking about before with the EXIF data. This thing will log your GPS location at the time that you take a photograph and embed that information into the EXIF data. So that you can then, you know, if you wanted to really go crazy with your keyword searching type stuff, you can actually search for stuff based on GPS coordinates. And it will scan all your photos if they've got this this GPS information embedded in them, according to your longitude and latitude that where you were when you took your photo. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's fabulous. You could also share that information, for instance. I mean, you could Google Earth it. You could put the latitude and longitude in. Google Earth it.
That's it.
Go back and have a look at where it was. You could tell other photographers the location and the exact spot that you know, if you wanted to share that information of where you took the picture. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's,
and it's interesting that you mentioned the Google Earth, because it's actually using Google Maps as the source data.
Wow.
So, yeah,
wow,
pretty exciting. I mean, at the moment, it only supports Sony cameras, but I'm sure other vendors will get in on the act. You know, there'll probably be other hardware manufacturers will come out with similar devices. But, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I tell you, Sony are the people to look for. They're the people to watch for. They are really, really moving ahead in the imaging world, of course.
It's going to be interesting to see where they go with their digital SLR line. It really is.
I think be very afraid would be my warning to other camera manufacturers.
Yep. It will be interesting.
But it will be beneficial for everyone.
Well, one would hope. Yep.
Let's hope so, yes.
Yep. I saw the range of lenses that they've brought out to support the Alpha. There's some pretty mean stuff in there.
Oh, I think, like I say, be afraid. Be very afraid. They're going to be taking the world by a storm. People are going to love their gear. I really believe that.
And it'll have the marketing, you know, like, you know,
the club.
Sony are no strangers when it comes to marketing. So.
No, they've got money. They've got, you know, a lot of clout. So, no, it's going to be great for everyone, because it just pushes that envelope and pushes the competition and makes it better for all of us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mate, you enjoy your trip.
Will do.
And travel safely.
Of course.
And we look very forwardly to seeing the photos on your return.
I'll be making sure they're everywhere.
Sensational.
Good on you.
All right, mate. We'll talk to you in 2 or 3 weeks.
Look forward to it. Thanks, everyone.
See you then.
See you soon.
After I recorded this episode with Shelton, it occurred to me that one of the comments that I made was erroneous, and that was that Adobe Bridge stores the keyword information in an external database. That's actually not true. It does embed the keywords into the image file, and those keywords will travel with the image file to another application. What I don't like about Bridge, though, is that in order to add a keyword, you must first add the keyword to the database and then add it to the images that you want to tag with that keyword. What I like about a program like Thumbs is that I can select a file or a handful of files, then go Control K to add keywords, type in the keywords, separate them by commas if I want to add multiple keywords in one hit, and then just hit enter and they all get tagged. But unfortunately, like I said, that information is only stored in an external database and not written to the image files. So if anybody happens to know of another program like Bridge that is capable of writing the keywords to the image files themselves, so it's embedded within the image file, and can open raw files, and will allow me to just do it in one pass rather than having to add keywords to a database first and then add the keywords to the images, I'd love to hear about it. Okay. And sorry for the slight trip up the garden path there. I should have got my facts right before I said what I said. Okay, until we speak next time, take care.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
audiotou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
audiotou.com.